Today's reading is from 2 Kings. Now there were four leprous men outside the city gate, who said to one another, "Why should we sit here until we die? If we said, 'Let us enter the city,' the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. But if we sit here, we shall also die. Therefore, let us desert to the Aramean camp. If they spare our lives, we shall live. And if they kill us, we shall but die." So they arose at twilight to go to the Aramean camp. But when they came to the edge of the Aramean camp, there was no one there at all. For the Lord had caused the Aramean army to hear the sound of chariots and of horses and the sound of a great army, so that they said to one another, "The king of Israel has hired the king of the Hittites and the kings of Egypt to fight against us." So they fled away in the twilight and abandoned their tents, their horses, and their donkeys, leaving the camp just as it was, and fled for their lives. When these leprous men had come to the edge of the camp, they went into the tent and ate and drank and carried off silver and gold and clothing and went and hid them. Then they came back, entered another tent, carried off things from it, and went and hid them. Then they said to one another, "What we are doing here is wrong. This is a day of good news. If we are silent and wait until the morning light, we will be found guilty. Therefore, let us go and tell the king's household." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
For the message this morning. Hopefully this will be useful as we go through this today. As I start the message, I need some volunteers to help me. Do I have any volunteers who can help me this morning? One. Volunteers, plural. Two. All right. Three. Four. Okay. We have four volunteers out of approximately 1,000 people. You do the math on that one. Actually, guys, that was my illustration right there. That's as much as I needed you for. Lift a hand in the air if you were willing to volunteer. Now, before you think I'm about to smack down the other 996 of you, let me just admit, if I were in your shoes and this was reversed, I wouldn't have raised my hand either. If a pastor was up here preaching, I was sitting out in the congregation, I need a volunteer, I wouldn't raise my hand. Why? Because I don't know what I'm volunteering for. If you don't tell me what I'm going to be asked to do, I'm not going to raise my hand. And just to be honest with you, if I were sitting where you are, I'd probably be pretty comfortable about now. And I'm thinking, man, it's a long walk to go up there to the front of the sanctuary, get up on the chancel. I'm going to let somebody else have that honor. And then to be truthful, this might be a surprise to you, but I'm an introvert. I can build up the energy to do this right here and stand in front of a lot of people and talk, but if you were to ask what's my given preference, it's to be lost in the crowd. I'd rather just be sitting out and not draw attention to myself. If I come up in front of everybody, well, now I'm going to be self-conscious about that. So I get not raising a hand, but you know what else I get about my life? That the things that have brought me the greatest joy in life have come when I've gone against the grain of my personality. The things that have made me feel the most fully alive have been when I took a risk, when I stepped out, when I put myself out there. So there's this little dichotomy about Rob Fuquay, and I'm sure about some of you, that there's this part of your nature that hesitates doing this, but another part of you that knows up here, the things that have made me feel fully alive and engaged have been when I've gone out there. So on this day when we celebrate volunteers, as we come toward the close of our Unsung Heroes series, we'll finish it up next week, I want us to think about the importance of volunteering. We can call the message today the ABCs of volunteering, because I want us to think about four unsung heroes. Like many of our heroes in the Bible, we don't know their names. Very unassuming people, people you would have never picked to do something heroic. But because they volunteered, they not only saved their lives, they saved the lives of an entire city. Now, to appreciate this story, we need to know something about the background. So let me set the stage. The city of Samaria, a city in northern Israel, around the year 850 BC, is under siege by the king of Aram. They're surrounded by the Aramean army, but because they're a walled city, they can sort of withstand the attack. But the attack goes on for so long, they're now cut off from all supplies. No food, no water. And the writer of Scripture describes the conditions in the city in an economic way. He says things were so bad that the cost of a donkey's head was 2 pounds of silver. And the cost of a half a pint of cabs of pod seeds were worth about 2 ounces of silver. Now, what were cabs of pod seeds? Get this. That was dove's dung. So why is the writer talking about the cost of a donkey's head and a dove's dung? That's because that's what the people were eating. I'm getting your appetite ready for the pancake breakfast down the hall in just a little while. So we hope you'll go down there and eat the pancake breakfast. Now, how do you describe those conditions? Not good. But to make matters worse, some of the people in the city were resorting to cannibalism. They were beginning to destroy each other. And into that scene, the prophet Elijah steps up and he says, I'm going to tell you right now that this time tomorrow, at the gate of the city, wheat and barley will be sold for the going price. Now, if you had lived in Samaria that day, and the prophet had asked, everybody who's with me, raise your hand. How many of you would have shot a hand in the air? You'd have said, you've got to be joking. Look around you, man. There is no hope here. This is desperate. Civilization is collapsing. We're not even acting like human beings anymore. There's just no way. And that's when four unsung hero lepers step up. They're lying at the city gate, and they show us the power of volunteering. What did they do? The first thing they did was they seized the opportunity to do something. They seized the opportunity to do something. They don't get to live in the city. They are lepers. They live at the gate outside the walls. So look at the first thing they say to one another. Why should we sit here until we die? I mean, why are we just going to lie down and take this? Let's do something, for goodness sakes. So they plan to go down to the Aramean camp. In other words, they said, you know, we've got to take action here. And yet, think about this for a moment. The same conditions faced a whole city. And it was just these four who said, let's do something. Why is it that a large number of people can all face the same conditions and some just give up, but some other people say, no, we're going to do something? Why is that? In 1971, a Stanford psychologist named Philip Zimbardo did a test that came to be known as the Stanford Prison Experiment. It's been made into a movie. It was meant to be a two-week experiment in which volunteer students from Stanford would be either prisoners or guards. And one Sunday morning, the experiment started. The prisoner volunteers were rounded up from their homes in police cars. Nobody else knew this was an experiment. Neighbors looked out their windows and they saw these kids being handcuffed and put in police cars and driven away. They didn't know what was going on. They went to the prison where they were going to be kept, and the guards, other volunteer students, took over. Things got so out of hand, the experiment had to be called off in 6 days. The guards got to where they weren't even treating the prisoners like human beings anymore. The prisoner volunteer said, "We can't take this. We're breaking down. We've got to quit." The results of that study have been very interesting, looking at events like Abu Ghraib and what can happen to any person in any situation where they can go one of two directions. They can begin to lose their humanity or they can begin to find it. Zimbardo, the one who started the experiment, said about it years later, "Each of us possesses capacity to do terrible things, but we also possess an inner hero if stirred to action. That hero is capable of performing goodness. The key is calling out the hero within us." So go back to Samaria. There are people who are beginning to destroy each other. And there are some others, given a very small minority, very ordinary people, nothing special about them, who resist the temptation to give up their humanity and to say, no, let's do something. Great question for us is, are we people who are impacted by our conditions, or are we people willing to change our conditions? Do we let our environment determine who we are, or are we willing to step into a moment and to say, no, I'm not going to join in the downward spiral that is happening around me. I'm going to do something different. I'm going to speak a word into this moment. I'm going to take this opportunity to help another person and not wait until somebody else does. I'm going to see that right now I've got the chance to make a difference. I'm going to seize the opportunity. Now, let's think about the opportunity these lepers seized. We learn something else. They accepted imperfect options. That's a very important part of this story. They accepted imperfect options. If we say, let's enter the city, the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. But if we sit here, we're also going to die. Let's go to the enemy camp. In other words, let's give up the notion that there's some good option we're facing and just wait until the good option comes along. Let's forget that. And let's not let a good option not being in the picture prevent us from acting. There's an old preacher story. It's so worn out. You've heard it dozens of times. You could probably say it with me. Story about the guy who falls over the cliff. On his way down, he grabs a hold of the branch that's growing outside the cliff. It's the only thing that kept him from plunging to his death, but now he's in a predicament. He's hanging on this branch. If he lets go, he's going to die. He doesn't have a way to climb up, so he shouts out, "Help! Is anybody up there?" And a voice from heaven calls back, "Yes, trust me. Just let go." And the man shouts back. Okay, when I said you've probably heard this dozens of times, just forget that. The man shouts back, "Is anybody else up there?" Because at times we're all that man. And we stay where we are because there are no good options available to us, and we just freeze. Have you ever been out on a limb? Have you ever been in a stuck place? Have you ever felt trapped? Have you ever felt trapped in a relationship? You don't know how to get out of it. You don't know how to change it. You just stay stuck. Have you ever been trapped in your job? It's not fulfilling. It's beginning to wear on your energy and your personhood, but you don't know what else to do. You just stay stuck. Have you ever been trapped by your own mistakes and failures? What contributes to the feeling of being trapped is the idea that if I just hang on long enough, somebody's just gonna magically swoop down and take me out of my predicament, and I don't have to face a bad option. And so we just stay there holding on, but we can't stay there. We have to do something. We have to be willing to face an imperfect option. And when we do, we stand the chance of discovering what God can do. Look at what these lepers discovered as they faced an imperfect option. Number one, they found, or they discovered, God's power to change people's circumstances. That's what they discovered. When they finally said, well, then let's go to the enemy camp. Maybe we'll stand a chance there. That's when the writer tells us what the lepers are about to discover. That during the night, the Aramean army heard the sound of chariots. And they thought it was other nations coming to help Israel. So they got up and they fled. They left everything behind. Their food, their clothing, their gold, their silver. These lepers get to the camp and they go, are you kidding me? No one's here. They begin to feast. They start putting on the silk robes. They start hiding the gold and the silver in there. They go, man, we have got it made. You see, when they took steps in the direction of an imperfect option, they discover God's power to change circumstances. God works that way so often. Remember when the Israelites were trapped against the Red Sea and the chariots of Pharaoh were behind them? They had nowhere to go. When did the Red Sea part? Anybody remember this in the story? It did not part until they walked into the water. When their feet hit the water, the sea parted. Sometimes we have to do our part. We have to do what is within our power to do, and that is to take a step, even if it's in the direction of an imperfect option, in order to discover what God can do. But some of you may say, well, Rob, you don't know what I'm going through. I mean, Rob, I might not make it through my circumstance. I might not get through this. Do you think that the lepers thought they were going to get through it? They went, no, thank you very much, no. They went to the Aramean camp fully accepting that we're probably going to die there. I love this part of the story. They said, if we stay here, we're going to die. If we go into the city, we're going to die. Let's go down to the Aramean camp. And it says, if they kill us, we shall but die. Don't you love that? What's the worst they're going to do to us? Kill us? Well, what do you think is going to happen to us here? When they did that, what did they discover? They discovered that death is not the enemy. Not living is the enemy. You know, it's actually a powerful thing when you have to face your own death. Because it helps you realize what's living all about then. We're all going to die one day. There is an expiration date for everybody in this room. The question isn't, will I die? The question is, will I live? Will I live between now and that time? Am I going to let my circumstances make me roll over and play dead? Or am I going to keep living? Those lepers went in a direction knowing we could probably die doing this, but they said we're at least going to face our death living as fully as we know how in the meantime. And then when they made this great discovery, they also found out something else about themselves. They found out that they were compelled to share good news. I think that's an important part of this story. They get to the enemy camp. They find everything that's just been abandoned. They are celebrating. They are high-fiving. They're, we got it made. And then they say, not we ought to go back and tell the others. Not, wouldn't it be a good idea to share this with them? Look at what they say. What we're doing is wrong. It's just flat wrong. If we keep our blessings to ourselves, we must go. We cannot stay silent. What compels somebody to think that way? It's when they really do believe that satisfaction from our blessings is bigger than just what those blessings can do for us. That the fullness of that satisfaction comes when we share what we have. It perhaps even comes from a belief that one day we might stand before our Maker and be asked to give an account of what we've done with the blessings entrusted to us, and realizing that more important than living my life in a safe place and in a comfortable place, more important than just being happy, is letting my life get used. That's what's important. Winston Churchill in World War II had a big problem on his hands. The miners in Wales were threatening a strike. They were having to work even longer hours, longer days, with no pay increase, with little recognition. But if they went on strike, it would have crippled the war effort in England. Winston Churchill got on a train. He went out to Wales to talk to all of the miners. But what's he going to say? Is he going to threaten them if they don't work? Is he going to shame them, going, if you let us down, you're going to cost the whole country the war? Here's what he did. He told a story. He said, at the end of this war, when we are victorious, there's going to be a parade in Piccadilly Circus. There's going to be scores of people there. And there's going to be a parade of all of the people who were heroes in this war. They're going to walk down this cheering street. And at the front of the line will be the Royal Air Force that chased the Luftwaffe from the skies, he said. Behind them will be the Royal Infantry that won in Dunkirk and ran Rommel out of North Africa. And after them, they're going to be the sailors who kept the sea lanes open. And at the end of the parade, the last group will be these men with miners' caps, soot streaked faces. Someone from the crowd is going to yell out to them, where were you during the war? And from 10,000 throats will come the reply, we were deep in the earth and our face was to the coal. The story goes that when Churchill finished, the miners picked up their gear and walked straight from the arena back into the coal pits, because they believed that there would be a parade one day and that they would get to see the difference that they made, and they did not want to miss out. Do you believe that? Do you believe one day, not in this life, but in the life to come, there's going to be a grand parade where all of the heroes of the faith are going to be celebrated? Our part might not be recognized by the scores of populations in this world, but it's going to be recognized by the one who counts the most. Where was I? I was right here, doing my part. Would you do your part? Whatever that part is that God has given you, would you do your part to make a difference until that day comes? Do I have any volunteers? Amen.